Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Marty Johnson reporting. In Mali's capital, Bamako, officials say two gunmen also died after attacking a hotel on Friday. Mariam Diallo reports two al-Qaeda affiliates are claiming responsibility.
Malian security officials say the gunmen were jihadists who entered Bamako's Radisson Blue Hotel at 7 a.m. in a car with diplomatic plates. They took scores of hotel guests and staff hostage. State-run TV ORTM on the scene showed live pictures of Malian and French security forces who had stormed the hotel, escorting some of the hostages out. Mali has been battling rebels linked to al-Qaeda for several years. Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb and an affiliate, El Mourabitoun, jointly claimed responsibility for Friday's assault. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Security forces in Cameroon say at least 10 people were killed in a suicide attack carried out by suspected members of the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Today's blast in the far northern region of Cameroon marked the deadliest attack by Boko Haram, which has also targeted Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria in recent months. Meantime, heavily armed security forces are patrolling streets and subways that are closed in Belgium's capital today as the government there warned of a risk of attacks similar to the multiple terrorist attacks in Paris that killed 130 people 8 days ago. Prime Minister Charles Michel said today the terror alert level is now Category 4 in response to quite precise information about the risk of an attack and over concerns that several individuals with arms and explosives could launch an attack, perhaps even in several places. This is VOA News. Several thousand defiant Parisians marked the one-week anniversary of the terror attacks Friday night, many laying wreaths and lighting candles or just standing in silence at the city's Place de la République, which has become a central memorial to victims of terror. Earlier, tens of thousands of Muslims lined up in a heavy rain for Friday prayers at Paris' central mosque. Security was very tight, and while many turned out to demonstrate, they said that Islam has nothing to do with terrorism. The Islamic State claimed responsibility for last Friday's coordinated terrorist attacks that killed 130 and wounded more than 350 others. Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak today called on his fellow Southeast Asian leaders to unite in moderation over extremism to combat jihadists. Steve Herman reports from the ASEAN summit in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Opening the 27th ASEAN summit, the host Najib Razak said he was altering his intended remarks in order to address the recent terrorist attacks by Muslim extremists in France, Mali, and elsewhere.
We must not lose sight of the fact that the ideology itself must be exposed as the lie that it is and vanquished, for it is not Islamic. It cannot be.
The Malaysian Prime Minister quoted the Quran to rebut the jihadists, telling his fellow Asian leaders,
"Moderation or wasatiyah is at the heart of Islam. It is a Quranic injunction that no Muslim can disobey."
Najib credits ASEAN since its inception in 1967 as helping to keep the peace in what he calls a highly diverse region. For some years, however, the region has been seeing increasing support among its Muslim extremists for such groups as al-Qaeda and the so-called Islamic State, according to regional security officials. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the ASEAN summit in Kuala Lumpur.
President Obama is continuing to make a case for his plans to accept 10,000 more Syrian refugees this year. Today, by meeting in Malaysia with children displaced by violence and poverty. Mr. Obama assured child refugees in Kuala Lumpur that they have a friend in the United States.
People who have been forgotten, or who've been discriminated against, or who've been tortured, or who've been subject to unspeakable violence, or have been separated from families at very young ages. That's American leadership. That's when we're the shining light on the hill.
In Washington, meantime, Republican Senator Ted Cruz, a presidential candidate himself, accused his Democratic colleagues of backing a flawed strategy to resettle Syrians.
But they are supporting a policy of bringing tens of thousands of Syrian Muslim refugees into this country, knowing full well that we cannot vet them to determine who is coming here to wage jihad.
The future of a bill to modify the refugee resettlement program is uncertain in the Senate. The House has already approved it. I'm Marty Johnson in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
So ECOWAS strongly condemns this terrorist attack, which constitutes a serious threat on the ongoing peace process and stability in Mali.
ECOWAS condemns the terrorist attack at a hotel in the Malian capital, Bamako, on Friday.
So as long as, for example, the East African community is not united on action that should be taken, it can be difficult to basically apply pressure.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza comes under pressure to resolve the crisis in his country.
Should it be below normal rainfall, then we can expect a further problem, reduced production for a second season running. I hope it does not come to that.
And the United Nations warns of possible food shortage in southern Africa. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, has condemned the terrorist attack at the Radisson Hotel in Bamako, Mali, on Friday that left at least 25 people dead. Mali's President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita declared a state of emergency and 3 days of mourning following the attack. Dr. Remy Ajebewa, Political Affairs Director at the ECOWAS Commission, told me that the regional bloc has assured citizens of West Africa of its strong and unshakable solidarity towards tackling terrorism and other forms of violent extremism.
In fact, ECOWAS condemns the hostage situation in Bamako. One, you realize that it's utterly shocked and appalling that the hostage situation that has occurred in Radisson Hotel in Bamako on Friday, 28th. And it's just coming a week after the unfortunate and dastardly terrorist attack in Paris, France, on Friday, 13th November, 2015, just within 1 week. So ECOWAS strongly condemns this terrorist attack, which constitutes a serious threat on the ongoing peace process and stability in Mali. Given the fact that we all know and we're all thinking that we're in the right direction, given the signing of this peace accord. So what ECOWAS on our part is just doing now to make sure that at least we remain resolute to ensure that the region is free of terror, safe and secure for all the citizens of the community.
Well, Dr. Ajebewa, with the cooperation between ECOWAS and the government of Mali, what is the next step forward in terms of helping the country push out these terrorist activities?
Yeah, one thing you will also realize that on the part of ECOWAS, we've adopted the counter-terrorism strategy, which is human security-oriented. And we know that this issue of terrorism has crippled the economic and social activities, not only in Mali itself, as well as the neighboring countries. So what we believe is that there should be cooperation, which constitutes a centerpiece of efforts to prevent and combat. As we all know, no single country is capable of combating terrorism single-handedly. And in this light, that's why we teamed up with what we call ECAS, ECOWAS and ECAS, to fight this terrorism in West Africa. And fighting it has become a priority for all ECOWAS member states. So, and we believe that effectively combating terrorism is synonymous with what we call the silencing the gun. And this can be achieved through the consolidation of cross-border cooperation, the robust exchange of intelligence and information between member states. And then, three, also to harmonize our legislations, and then to reinforce capacities of the law enforcement and security operatives so that they can chase out these criminals or potential terrorists across the countries in West Africa.
So far, Dr. Ajebewa, how has been the cooperation between individual member states of ECOWAS in terms of revising their strategies and coming up with solutions to nip some of these terrorist activities in the bud before innocent civilians are harmed.
One important point, if you also recall, is that while we are promoting strong political dialogue within this most both what we can call the government as well as the people from the northern Mali, if we look at it, the other way is also we believe that beyond the regional strategy, it is also important for the member states to pay attention to the issues of belligerence, such as the right of court-martial of soldiers to fair processes, and the right of vigilantes to disarm and to be rehabilitated into the communities. So we are looking at it from the two-point approach, looking at it from the one, the security dimension, also looking at it as other areas. For example, if you've heard of what we call our Sahel strategy, I don't know whether people have heard, the Sahel strategy is an approach that we also believe that it cuts across both the national and international to improve security, stability, and development of the Sahel-Saharan zone with intervention in three areas. And these three areas are, one, interconnection of infrastructures, which you believe once there's infrastructure, there's resilience and food security. That is, if there's food security as well, to some extent, the issue of poverty will be reduced. And also the issue of promoting education, messaging issues on citizenship and peace, and also encouraging technical and vocational education in order to build the capacities of the nomadic population. So these are other measures along the security support measures that I've said earlier.
What is your message to the people of Mali after this terrorist attack?
The message we have is ECOWAS presents its sincere condolence to the families of the victims and to the government and people of Mali. And we also want to assure them, as well as the entire West African citizens, of our strong and unshakable solidarity towards tackling terrorism and any other forms of violent extremism.
Dr. Remi Ajibewa is the political affairs director at the ECOWAS Commission. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. An African regional bloc has pulled its headquarters out of crisis-hit Burundi after months of violence. The 12-nation International Conference on the Great Lakes Region, or ICGLR, said in a statement Friday that their pullout was to ensure the safety and security of its staff. The move comes in the wake of growing pressure on President Pierre Nkurunziza to find a peaceful resolution to the crisis in his country. My colleague Douglas Impunga asked John Manirekazi, a member of the Burundian diaspora in the United States, whether the Burundian leader will relent to international pressure to negotiate peace.
I believe pressure can work if it's well coordinated within the region. So as long as, for example, the East African community is not united on action that should be taken, it can be difficult to basically apply pressure. Remember that Pierre Buyoya, who was the president two times in Burundi, on his second time, he was under pressure under international sanction. It was because Tanzania, which was the biggest player in the region, was willing to apply pressure. And at this moment, it does not look like we will see whether the new government of Tanzania will do. Otherwise, pressure can be absorbed. And Nkurunziza is actually leveraging on the use of AMISOM troops to get money to actually try to relieve some of his pressure. But we believe that if the region is serious about the action to be taken, I think Nkurunziza should actually start listening.
If people take up arms, won't it be too late for the intervention of maybe regional leaders, international community?
It can be too late because so far people have died and it was unnecessary. And because Nkurunziza is not willing to de-escalate the conflict, And if you deny people peaceful revolution, it ends up ending in violent revolution. So it's kind of predictable. People will not take the violence sitting down. The other thing is, if Nkurunziza listened to the world, even part of his political party, half of which is in exile because they advised him about the danger of taking this road, he could have done a step down and just de-escalate. But again, we're talking about a culture of impunity. Someone believe he's providentially anointed to run the country forever. And if you're going to work at a providential level, we don't have any need for constitutions or laws. We need basically people to say, okay, I've been appointed by God. And this is basically the problem in Burundi. The danger is that once you have non-state actors beginning to claim this violence, it becomes out of hand. You have the whole region now in trouble.
Is there fear of this problem taking on an ethnic dimension?
Yes, there is a fear for that because Nkurunziza is out of argument. He has 10 years of rule. The country has actually backslid economically, socially. Well, there was some semblance of stability, but the country is actually not better than when he came. So he found the boogeyman in ethnic solidarity, which is easy when you have a mostly illiterate population. So you can pull on that string. And they've been trying to do that. His party in February started doing propaganda saying this is the Tutsis wanting to come and get back the power, and you, the Hutus, have to stand with your Hutu people so that they don't take the power. And you can see how dangerous that is where that can lead. It can lead into an ethnic conflict and genocide.
John Manirakiza is a member of the Burundi diaspora in the United States. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Washington. The Kenyan Devolution and Planning Cabinet Secretary Anne Waiguru has bowed to public pressure and resigned from her cabinet position. In a speech at her office to the media on Saturday, Waiguru cited health reasons for her resignation. This following pressure over recent revelations of corruption in her ministry. For more on this story, Okia Omtata, a Kenyan civil rights activist from the group Kenyans for Justice and Development Trust, joins me live via telephone link from the capital, Nairobi. Hello, Okia.
Hello.
Okia, Ms. Waiguru appears to be saying that she is being persecuted for things that she has not personally done or committed. What say you?
The issue has not been about her personally committing or not committing. The issue has been about her capacity to oversight the Ministry of Devolution. And that's why some of us have been saying she needed to vacate and give us an atmosphere where an independent investigation could be carried out in her absence. At this stage, we are unable to place a finger on her as a culprit who did this or whatever. But it was under her watch that things went haywire. And also, personally, I sued her some time back last year, challenging the changes she was making in the government, whereby she was lining up her people in ministries that were then given a lot of money that has now been stolen. And I went to court last year trying to stop that, saying that what she's doing is preparing ground for theft. And I've been borne out of that. I'm not a prophet. I've never seen a prophet. But I've been borne out by the fact that those people were eventually used to steal from government. And she cannot wash her hands of it. Although she came up and said, wishy-washy at one time, that she had blown the whistle on the issue. And my argument and others is that a boss is never a whistleblower. A whistleblower is always a junior person who fears consequences and leaks information out. She had the power and the role to oversight that ministry as a political representative of the president, who is elected and put in charge of an unelected civil service. So she was our elected person there, by our virtually elected person in the ministry, with the purpose of helping the president oversight.
Now, Okiya,
the ministry, and she failed.
Okiya, the president seemed to have confidence. He reposed confidence in Anne Waiguru until she resigned today. Why is she to blame for the alleged corruption in her portfolio?
Well, I think, first of all, the president's reasons for having an initial confidence in her, given the fact that he had said, and we supported him, that all anybody mentioned in corruption should pack and go until he's cleared by the anti-corruption, the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission. The reason for keeping her there remain hidden to us, but she had become the face of the president's government, and maybe that is the reason why he was hanging on to her until the last minute, but we didn't know. But the reason, the thing is that denial is not the issue. Under the new constitution, under Chapter 6 of the new constitution, and especially the articles require that a state officer must be beyond suspicion, like Caesar's wife. So what you are saying, that Caesar's passions had been cast on Waiguru, she was therefore incompetent to continue with life as usual until a credible process cleared her and restored her to the public office. So, and the thing at this station was not a proportion of blame to say that she's guilty or not guilty. It was to say that the trust that Kenyans had put into her, she's unable to defend, she's unable to look after the trust Kenyans had put into her because of the allegations that had been made against her and because of the massive corruption that had occurred in her docket. Whereby initially she denied no money was stolen, then later she accepted that close to $1 billion, that's about $1 million, had been stolen.
Now,
Okiya,
several Kenyans have called for an independent investigation into that cabinet ministry, to be specific. Now that she's resigned her position, do you foresee the government establishing a group to thoroughly investigate this alleged corruption in her ministry?
I personally would be opposed to a group investigating her. Let her just be processed through the criminal justice system. She needs criminal investigations, and the only organs that can conduct a criminal investigation are the Ethics and Corruption and the police, the directors of criminal investigation. Let those organs be allowed to do their work. And if they clear her, well and good. If they condemn her, well and good. But her resigning does not clear her of the allegations or end the search for what happened. So, under the Kenyan law, the crimes you commit in office follow you into retirement or resignation. So she is still within our crosshairs, and we want money, first of all, the money that was lost to be recovered, and number two, those who are culpable to be punished according to the laws of the Republic of Kenya. Nothing less than that.
Thank you very much. Okiya Omtatah is a Kenyan civil rights activist from the group Kenyans for Justice and Development Trust. He joined us live from Nairobi. The United Nations estimates more than 27 million people in southern Africa may not have enough food to eat over the next 6 months because of poor harvests. The situation could get worse as El Nino weather patterns affect rainfall and crop production. For the UAE, Sebastian Nhofu has more from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
The two UN agencies, the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and the World Food Programme, WFP, say drought and flooding over the last growing season are to blame for the current food shortages in southern Africa. The threat is most severe for Malawi, Zimbabwe, and Madagascar. Chimimba David Piri, FAO coordinator for Southern Africa, says the number of food insecure people has increased 13% compared to a year ago. He says the severe El Nino weather patterns forecast for the region won't help matters.
So we do expect that certain parts of the sub-region will have normal to below
normal rainfall. Should it be below normal rainfall, then we can expect a further problem, reduced production for a second season running. I hope it does not come to that. If it does, then the numbers of food insecure people are going to increase, because even those people that were resilient this year will fall into food insecurity next year.
The UN relief agencies say Tanzania is the lone country in the region that produced enough in the 2014-2015 season to meet its needs. South Africa and Zambia will not need to import food only because they have enough in their stocks. The rest of the region will have to rely on imports or international aid. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A new 403-kilometer road linking Bamenda, Cameroon, with Enugu, Nigeria is nearly finished, but it is already transforming the lives of local merchants and residents. The road is part of an ambitious six-country economic corridor being built between Lagos to Mombasa. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the roadside in Manyu Division of southwestern Cameroon.
The village of Kandem on Cameroon's southwest border with Nigeria has become a bustling market in the past 2 months. It sits on the new road linking Bamenda to Enugu. Palm wine seller Tikuba Andrew crosses over on his motorcycle from southern Nigeria with the 20 liters of wine he taps daily.
Well, we used to travel a month and go and sell at a very cheap rate. But now that the road has passed, people have come in and we are selling it very, very high now. And we are able to pay children in school. But in the former times, nobody even cared. You carry your head, take 3 miles to go and take 250 francs per jog. But now I could take 2,000 per jog a day.
The boost to commerce is creating jobs as local plantation owners recruit workers for their expanding operations. Locals say the most enterprising merchant is young farmer Nya Gideon. He has a 30-hectare cocoa plantation along the new road in Cameroon and is still expanding.
At the past, since there was no route, all products were very low in price because you buy it, you stay more on the road, and it will spoil. And even people who are milling oil here, the price was cheap. But now as the road have come, the prices have bit up.
Cameroon supplies Nigeria with food and farm produce, while Nigeria supplies Cameroon with basic commodities and clothing. But Cameroonian authorities worry the road may degrade fast if truck drivers continue to haul more than the authorized width. Peter Tiende, the most senior government official in Cameroon's Manyu Division, where the road passes, says he is stopping overloaded trucks. He says such vehicles would destroy the road, even if they are promoting economic activity. He says he can't just sit by and watch that happen. Cameroon and Nigeria signed the agreement to build the road in 2007 with $423 million funding from the African Development Bank. It is part of a larger highway conceived 3 decades ago to link Lagos to Mombasa on the Indian Ocean. That highway would stretch 6,300 kilometers from Nigeria and Cameroon into the Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Kenya. The African Development Bank estimates that highway is about 60% complete, but says negotiations continue as political differences and insecurity slows the process. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaounde.
You are listening to Nightline Africa from the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy. Is the melody, yo, I got the remedy, Mr. Remedy. All of the girls, them, they like to follow me, go Ferragamo, Ati Bugatti, King of Sheeta. Oh yeah, the Fabio, I love you, baby. Never, never leave me, yo, I love you, baby. Oh baby, I love you, baby. Baby, never leave me, yo, I love you, baby, baby.
Personally, I rock your body. I promise you go home, you won't tell daddy. I give it to you like you never had it. Screaming, judging, like speaking Chinese. Now waiting me this, pack a boom boom. Now waiting I see Zaga, but she know one me. She talks so she know one. I know go lie, the things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I deal with you.
Personally, I
go deal with you.
Personally,
I go deal with you. I go deal with you personally, professionally. I see what you doing intentionally. Get me wanted physically. So give it to me radically. Emotionally, psychologically. You're turning me on biologically. Sexually, dramatically. And she talks that she know why. I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood. As long as you're feeling the groove, I go deal with you.
Personally,
I go deal with you.
Personally,
I go deal with you. I go deal with you.
Yeah, exceptionally. The reason is spiritually. Money speaking so drastically. Magically, internationally. Abba, abatically. Rama, now for dictionary. Saga, for she know one me. She talks so she know one.
I know
what
I the things within my mind.
After this one, put it back on replay. If you feeling this one, let me hear you say. Dash on the beat, double bang, killing this. We don't count with the queen, we don't count for the street. Count with the twist, let it dance with your hips. Sense on the scene, I'll tell them what you think.
Enjoy, don't say where I come out. I want for dance, cha-cha.
DJ.
Monday night the dance floor, DJ why you never ask for, play that song and then they ask for, on Monday night the dance floor, DJ why you never ask for, this not the song and then they ask for, I say, no girl to girl or man to man, we don't hold on hand to hand, fine by the girl like me BBM, fine for me girl make a BBN, sexy girl see me with them like Titanic when I sing with them.
Hey,
why me? Baby girl, come move it, move it.
Dasha.
She's whining like a Indian.
Now come the Jones bag of Indiana. Never seen the way that she wanna get. You never seen her dip it down low. Swing up like a turntable and suck her dress. I know you wanna know how she goes down low and the rhythm take control. I know you wanna know why she got me trapped in a limbo. That's what it seems go. But anytime when she come around, she get this feeling where they do me like fever. And when she dance with my mezzo boo, he dey be me like Senna for Fana. Me like how she play the bass line, it makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she that, it makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's what me talk say. I don't like this shirt, but your body. But you know say, my mama don't like them. I don't want this shirt but your body. What's up? Cause you know say my papa don't like them. What's up? Listen up. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na. Oh na 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 na.
I never ever lose a damn. My mama taught me to look at them, but them my one, them my guru. See the baby, them my band.
I like how she play the bass line. It makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she that, it makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's what me talk say. I don't like this shirt, but your body.
Music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for our Saturday commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It is always very important for me to make a weekly analysis of U.S. policy towards Africa. At the same time, I pay close attention to African opinion on and attitudes towards the United States. This week, we are still recovering from the crisis in Paris and its implication for U.S. policy, French policy, and the African government policies. Because we live in a global system today, and one event in one part of the world affects events elsewhere on the planet. Two issues can be emphasized now. Recent events in Mali brought back the question of the Tuaregs in North Africa and the implication of political stability in Mali. The African Union and the ECOWAS have been very much involved in the Malian crisis. American interest in what is going on in Mali has been debated in many fora in the United States. The think tanks, the religious groups, the various NGOs and others have been very much interested. So if you are looking at U.S. policy in Africa, the problem of terrorism becomes a very interesting issue. And this has implications from Mauritania all the way to Madagascar. And all the 54 states in Africa are affected. So American policy towards all these countries, alphabetically, Angola, Chad, and alphabetically going through the rest of the African countries, ending with Zimbabwe. So the big question of terrorism and political violence is back on the table, because what happened in France has serious implications for the French in Africa, and of course it has implications for the United States. So French-American relations are very much affected by events elsewhere in the world, as in Syria now. The Cold War is over, but foreign policies of governments represented at the UN are going to be affected by these recent trends. The second point is poverty, stupid. This is another big issue we all have to pay attention to. The large number of young Africans risking their life on the Atlantic or on the Mediterranean bound for Europe is very ironic, because 500 years ago, young men from Europe were sailing south of Cape Bojado for Africa. At the beginning, it was good relationship, but then later on, it led to the human cargo. A large number of Africans were captured and brought across the Atlantic Ocean to American ports, from Brazil all the way up to Canada. That was the slave trade 500 years ago. Today, the world is more integrated. We have more machines, more technology, more science, more human relationships. And when you talk about American policy towards Africa, there was no America 500 years ago when Columbus came here. There were people here. Most of them are gone. When you really look at human history now, and you're looking at foreign policy towards Africa, you look at events 500 years ago, even 50 years ago in World War II, and you have to look at events since the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Vietnam War, Korean War, and all these countries in that time, terrorism was very much part of the so-called decolonization movement. And when you talk about terrorism today, you're really looking at total confusion among human beings. Human beings debating about financial resources, agricultural resources, climate change, and all other issues. How are human beings going to develop state building, nation building, and human relationships? And what is the role of religion in the new dispensation in human society? So if you conclude this narrative with regard to U.S. policy towards Africa, terrorism is going to be another issue in America's relations with Africa, not only because it affects America, but it also has implications for African state building and nation building. In Nigeria, President Jonathan lost power, likely because of terrorism. whether it was maladministration and the misuse of resources in fighting violence and not addressing the problem of poverty in that country. That issue affected him to the point that he came to America recently and visiting Howard University. That is very interesting development in terms of history. And that's the way it is today for America, France, Africa, and the world.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, when you are surrounded by vultures, try not to die. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
France is America's oldest friend and first ally, declared U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry during a visit to Paris after the devastating terrorist attacks by ISIL. He warned not to mistake what these attacks represent. This is not a clash of civilizations. These terrorists have declared war against all civilization. They kill Yazidis because they are Yazidis. They kill Christians because they are Christians. They kill Shia because they are Shia. They rape and torture and pillage and call it the will of God. They are, in fact, psychopathic monsters, and there is nothing, nothing civilized about them. Secretary Kerry made clear this is a battle between civilization itself and barbarism, between civilization and medieval and modern fascism, both at the same time. And that is why every single nation-state in the region and around the world is opposed to ISIL. The murder of 132 people and injuring of hundreds more, including four Americans, is an assault not just on France, but coming on the heels of brutal attacks in Lebanon, Iraq, and elsewhere, it is an assault on civility itself, said Secretary Kerry. He went on to thank the men and women who bravely reported to the scene of the attacks and those who continue to work around the clock to heal the injured, restore calm, and provide relief. Secretary Kerry called for a sense of fierce solidarity among good and decent people everywhere. The terrorists must not be allowed to intimidate the people of the civilized world. We will not change our course or cancel our plans, including our plans to come together in Paris later this month for the UN climate conference, said Secretary Kerry. Ultimately, ISIL and all who share their despicable ideology will be defeated. We will continue also to show compassion to those who seek refuge from the violence that the terrorists engender, said Secretary Kerry. We will fight to ensure that the world that our children inherit is richer in love and shorter on hate.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.